Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have with me Dr. Susan Martinez, who is the author of The Mysterious Origins of Hybrid Man, Crossbreeding and the Unexpected Family Tree of Humanity. Dr. Martinez has a doctorate in anthropology, and she is also the book review editor at the Academy of Spiritual and Consciousness Studies, and the author of The Psychic Life of Abraham Lincoln, The Hidden Prophet, Time of the Quickening, and The Lost History of the Little People. Basically, she lives in Clayton, Georgia, and we're pleased to have her here today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Are you still in Clayton?
Yes, I am. Where are you?
Atlanta. It's not too far away.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm down here in Dunwoody.
Oh, that's neighbors.
I have a plastic surgery practice here. But I've done a lot of, in fact, I did a interview with Philip Coppens right before he died, and I've done a lot of...
I didn't know he passed away.
Yes, he did. It was really odd because he wanted to do another interview, and he sent me a book, and then I was announcing it on the show, and Don came on and said he passed away last night. So
Oh, my goodness, he wasn't even old.
No, he had cancer. But anyway, so Philip and, a lot of the Paul von Voord and, a lot of the authors who have published. Yeah, Paul is up in Dahlonega near you.
Right.
And so, so I've had a real strong interest in this.
Okay,
the
so you know what the score is.
Yeah.
I'm getting that echo effect, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe Doug can... fix that for us. Yeah. So would you like to give the audience a little bit of your background and how you became interested in, I guess, the more, the less Darwin line of explaining evolution and what might have really happened based on the evidence of the skeletal evidence?
I got my training in... the standard model of paleoanthropology at Columbia University a long time ago. And I didn't last very long in academia, to tell you the truth. It just wasn't my cup of tea. I broke off, and I've been on my own ever since, freelance. I wrote a couple of books, and it got to the point where I had to write a book about the origin of people. A book prior to Hybrid Man was The Lost History of the Little People, and that was a natural prequel for the story of man. And a couple of people were bugging me to do it. I was aware for a long time that we were getting a bunch of hogwash from the textbooks and from the academic courses, because evolution itself is, it's the one scientific myth we have carried over from the 19th century. And for certain reasons, it played its role in the 19th century by getting away from biblical dogma, which had to be done. Science had to set itself on an equal footing. You know, until Darwin, everything was interpreted according to a chapter and verse in the Holy Bible. Science had to establish itself. Okay, fine. But the theory itself doesn't wash.
So what did what conclusions did you come to after looking at Darwinian evolutionary theory and then looking at what you were seeing in your study of anthropology?
Well, anthropology is the Darwinian theory, but my studies has come out of archaeology, linguistics, folklore, spiritology, a combination of factors, cosmology. All those factors come into play in figuring out how things got started here on Earth.
So, So you have some theories that interbreeding between the different lines that preceded Homo sapiens was very common,
rather than indeed.
It was just one line after another that occurred.
Right. What Darwinism is telling us is that it started out with a very ape-like creature in the beginning, mm-hmm. who had evolved from apes, and that creature, by happenstance and genetic mutation, which are basically genetic mistakes, happened to improve a little bit and then improved a little bit more through natural selection and gene mutation, random gene mutations. We're talking about the human brain, and we're trying to pin it on randomity, which is absurd. I don't know how anybody could swallow that. Okay, that's the basic background, that we have evolved. In other words, we have mutated. What I'm saying is that there is an alternative to that, and it's really very simple. It doesn't involve natural selection or mutations at all. It only involves the intermingling of races. At the beginning, there were two races on Earth, an anatomically modern human race, who were the little people. That's where the little people come in. And that animal man type. There were those two. Well, they were not supposed to interbreed, but they did. Mm-hmm. They did. They produced a new kind of race. In the fossil record, it's basically called Homo erectus, erect man. He walked on two feet. He walked with he had a straight spine. Okay, so now there are three races on Earth, and those three in various combinations, again, crossbred, producing other types, including Neanderthal man and Cro-Magnon man. And there has never been a period in the history of man that there was not this forbidden interbreeding going on. So all the races are the result of hybridization with not a lick of evolution in sight.
So you quoted in the book that there were edicts coming down from the gods not to interbreed. Do you want to talk about them a little bit and why the instructions were coming down that interbreeding was not to be done? Have you thought about that? What was that about?
Well, okay, that's getting into the spiritual history of man, and I don't think that the story can be told strictly from bones and from the physical matter. Because man is a spiritual person. We are composed of a body and a spirit. So our story cannot be told without the spirit side.
I agree.
The little people race were the only ones on Earth with the spark, with the ability to resurrect in the afterlife. You see, the lower races did not have the spark. Their soul went out like a candle in the wind.
Like more like an animal does, a group soul?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, more like an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to preserve this immortality for humanity, which was what the little people possessed, they were commanded by the angels to keep themselves and preserve the seed. This is something that you find in the records, where the races, even in the Hebrew scriptures and so forth, to preserve the seed. The same was with Hittites in Turkey, to preserve the seed. And they did to a certain extent, but there were periods when that prohibition broke down, and there was mixing. Then, when the little people mixed with the Earth Man, they produced a typeset. I use the word Ihuan. It's from the Owaspe scriptures. I use the word Ihuan. They're very similar to the Cro-Magnon man. That race was also commanded to keep the seed, to preserve the seed, because they were an improved race. They were a very strong and mighty race, and they had many of the gifts that the little people, that they inherited from the little
people. They were bigger. They were more the...
They were big. In fact, they were the giants.
They were bigger than normal-sized humans then.
Yes.
And what, can you give me an idea, just backing up a little bit, can you give me an idea how widespread the little people were around the Earth, and then whether or not Cro-Magnon was also widespread, or were they in Africa, or where were they centered?
Cro-Magnon was everywhere, because these things were happening in all the divisions of the Earth.
Okay, so it wasn't
existed.
Like just one country, one continent.
Yeah, we've sort of been misled by the Garden of Eden idea and the out of Africa idea. These things happened everywhere. Were happening everywhere.
Simultaneously, then.
Yeah.
So the little people are, I mean, the remains of the little people are worldwide then.
Yes, they are.
Okay. That's something
that
I don't
book?
Think our listeners know. You know, we don't understand that there, you know, all over the world we had this, you know, the little people race that I didn't know that.
Even today we have in the hidden places, you know, in remote jungle and mountain areas on almost every continent there are pockets of pygmy people. That is a subject I covered in the previous book, The Lost History of the Little People book.
Right.
I traced them down, and they're still in the world, but they all are of the mixed type, again, hybrids. Most of them, the Earthmen were darker skinned. Most of the little people today are darker skinned, but they have certain traits from the original little people who were called Ihins. It's a very ancient name.
Do they have spiritual gifts like the Aborigines have, like in terms of telepathy and, you know, dream time? And, I mean, is that a common trait among the pygmies?
Absolutely.
So it really is a different spiritual being, I mean, with different gifts.
Yes, and they have kept these things for eons, and they still have them. In Malaysia and in other parts of the world, they are the people most familiar with the botanicals in the jungle and how to use them. They know many of them. The high class Malaysians go to the jungle people to get aphrodisiacs and different kinds of cures, and they pay a good price for them too.
Well, they probably have, you know, spiritual knowledge, you know, just knowing. They'll look at a plant and they'll know what it does, you know, rather than have to learn it from books like we do.
Well, that's where their shamans, that's the kind of work their shamans do. They go into trance and they commune with their familiar spirits
and
they're instructed on the right botanicals.
Right. Well, and that would be, there would be different people, indigenous people in different areas of the world that would have the same traits. So that would point towards your theory that these people were worldwide and that pockets have survived because they did not crossbreed with other races.
Yeah, like in the Philippines, there's there are little people in the Philippines. They're called Aetas, and they're pretty widespread. They're very delicate looking. Online, I saw some wonderful pictures of them. Quite beautiful, very little. But they're sort of light brown skin, but there is hiding in the jungles of the Philippine Sea a tribe called the Abenlens, and they are also little, but they're white, like the original mm-hmm. little people.
And okay, so the original little people were more Caucasian.
They were.
Okay. What color hair did they have?
They had white hair and yellow hair.
Okay. And they were about 4 feet tall on average as adults?
Originally, they were even smaller, 3 feet.
Really? 3 feet. So basically, I mean, some of them in some of the locations then, you know, crossbred with the taller Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal. Would you say both of those?
Yes.
And Homo erectus?
Yes.
Okay. And then they produced a more modern man when they did that.
It depends on the genetic makeup of the group that they crossbred with.
Mm-hmm.
The Cro-Magnons range from a very Neanderthaloid type to a very modern and refined type. They're very mixed. There's a whole spectrum there, but that's because they were so prone to mixing.
Mm-hmm. So Homo erectus was probably the last common factor before we had Homo sapiens. Would you say that was true? I mean, similar.
I don't know exactly what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, which do you think? Well, how do you think? Let me ask you this: how do you think Homo sapiens came about? Which is what we are.
Yeah.
I mean, specifically, do you have an idea of how that worked?
18,000 years ago mm-hmm. is when the Homo sapiens came about, and that was mm-hmm. when the little people mixed with the Cro-Magnon type, the mm-hmm. Aihuans, and they produced a race called the Gans. G-H-A-N-S. That word is actually still very much in the language because in the Orient it became Khan, which it meant king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you trace these things, you find that the holy race and the little people were the sacred little people. The names and the motifs associated with the original holy race eventually got taken up by the kings,
mm-hmm.
who also wanted to make themselves look holy. So that's one example of when that happened, the word Gan becoming Khan, like Genghis Khan.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm in a different cycle of research, and I'm studying that word Khan, the Khan dynasty in Mexico, and the Chan word, tracing that through China and through South America. So, yeah, most of these phenomena were worldwide in a sense.
Now, the Khan phenomena, these people were rather large, weren't they? I mean,
yes,
when you think
were.
Of Genghis Khan, they were bigger than we are. I mean, like as average Americans are.
Yes.
So they had some of the larger genetic, I mean, the genes from the giants.
They did.
Say? Okay. And let's talk a little bit about the giants, because we haven't really mentioned them, but where did they fall out, and where did they, I assume they were worldwide too, because I know
yes.
there's fossil records worldwide of the giants. I actually have a book on the giants in America that
Is
I think I'm going to
Dewhurst? Yeah, I've got that too. I've got a blurb in it. Did you see on the opening page?
Mm-hmm.
I blurbed it.
Yeah, right. So that is, the giants were worldwide, just like the little people. And how would you characterize the giants? Were they Homo erectus, Homo sapiens? I mean, where did they come in?
Homo erectus did produce some very tall lineages, mm-hmm. and the same would hold for their offspring when they mixed with the little people, producing the Aihuns, who were very tall, of stature, strong.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that was the first Homo sapiens, or were they later?
The truth is that the little people were the first Homo sapiens, and they were on the scene almost from the beginning.
Yeah, they were the one with the spirits, the soul.
Yeah, and they were morphologically modern, anatomically modern, only they were very tiny.
Right. So crossbreeding them with the... Yeah. So crossbreeding them with the Homo erectus and the giant races then produce modern man.
I didn't get all of that. I'm sorry.
Crossbreeding the little people with the larger races, either Homo erectus or the giants. I mean, I'm not sure how the giants fit in, or if they are Homo erectus. That crossbreeding then produced the modern, regular-sized Homo sapiens.
That's true.
Okay. I'm just trying to get the crossbreeding correct. And when would you say that probably occurred? What time frame?
Like I said before, I think 18,000 years ago is when the final product was produced in the mm-hmm. Ghans, when the little people crossed with the Aihuns, who were the sort of a mixed Cro-Magnon type. That was 18,000 mm-hmm. years ago, and it happens to be the time of Apollo. Apollo is one god that has been remembered up to modern times, but he ruled the earth mm-hmm. For 3,000 years, and that was 18,000 years ago. It was in Apollo's time that man was beautified, and in mm-hmm. scientific terms, that when Homo sapiens was produced.
So where did Apollo come from? Was Apollo off planet, or...
Yeah, the planet is the in the entire history of human life on Earth, there has been a god of Earth mm-hmm. for a reign of 3,000 years. After 3,000 mm-hmm. years, a new god comes on the scene and rules for another 3,000 years. So 18,000 years ago, Apollo was appointed as the god of Earth and ruled mm-hmm. for 3,000 years. He was followed by Thor, and that's a name that's remembered both in
the Northlands god, right?
And in Egypt. And Thor ruled for 3,000 years. In the next cycle, 12,000 years ago, Osiris became the god of mm-hmm. Earth and ruled for 3,000 years.
Mm-hmm. In Egypt.
Yes, and then he was followed by Phragopati, who ruled for 3,000 years, starting 9,000 years ago. And that mm-hmm. name is remembered by the Hindus as Prajapati.
And that came from India.
And the emphasis of civilization was in India at that time.
Mm-hmm. So would you say these gods were off-planet gods? I mean, were they weren't a product of anything happening on Earth, were they?
The cosmology that I use says that the gods of Earth are elder brothers. They once lived upon the Earth, but they have been in the heaven world for a long time and have been raised up to the point that they can administer a planet.
Right. So they're not third dimensional necessarily, although they can be third dimensional, but they
can
come and
go. What do you mean by third dimensional?
Well, I mean, they're not stuck in the third dimension. They can...
What's the third dimension?
The denser, where the atoms are more together, the density that we live in.
Okay.
You know, like ETs
I'm sorry.
Can
yeah.
come.
They are spiritual beings. They're not in the third dimension. They're in the next dimension.
Right, but they can come in. They can project into the third dimension and appear to people if they need to. I mean, wasn't Apollo seen?
They don't really do that. They have legions of angels doing things for them.
Okay. All right. Well, in any case, they do not reside necessarily in the third dimension.
Oh no, not at all. They lived out their corporeal life many eons ago.
Mm-hmm. So what happened after the Indian 3000, the one you mentioned last?
Yeah, okay.
Where does that bring us up to?
That brings us up to 6,000 years ago, at which time let me back up for a second, and if I forget what I'm talking about, remind me what we're saying. At the time of Fragapati in India and Persia, I'm up on this because I was just reading about it in the Austin Bible, actually rereading it. The first book was written through the prophet Zarathustra. That was the first prophet of man. That was 9,000 years ago under the godhood of Fragapati in Parthia, which is the India Persian lands. Zarathustra was raised up from birth to be the first prophet of man, prophet of God, and the God spoke the book through him, and on cloth and stone Zarathustra recorded it, and it was the first book in the world. Okay, so I actually remembered what we're talking about. So I'm going to jump up to the next cycle, which is interesting because it's not focused. The prophets are not focused in one place, but in four. This was a different kind of dispensation. It was 6,000 years ago, and in India, the prophet Brahma was raised up. In the Levant, the prophet Abraham was raised up. In China, the prophet Po was raised up. And in America, the prophet Hiawatha was raised up.
Okay. So we had different prophets in different parts of the world.
And the god of Earth in that cycle was a female.
Who was she?
If I'm getting this right, that was Sapenta Armij.
Okay.
And I believe the word Sapenta, that part of her name, is preserved in the Zenda Vesta.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Sapenta.
Okay.
The Book of God.
And that brings us up to what time frame that she was in power?
Up until Moses. And you know what, Susan? You know what happens in these cycles? With the advent of the prophet, mankind is raised up, and given to learning and doing good. And then over the next 3,000 years, he blows it. So by the end of the 3,000-year cycle, things are in darkness again, and that's when the gods and angels get organized again and bring a new prophet. But the age we're in is the end of that pattern. We're in a new age, and every man is going to have to be his own prophet. There are not going to be any more prophets sent to us. In fact, when we reach our destiny, which is to become spiritualized, we will not even need a God in heaven. That's not to say the Creator. I'm simply talking about the God of Earth.
Right. We'll be in touch with God through our inner being.
That is correct.
Right. So, now, you took us up to the time of Moses. Was that also the time of Elijah? Is that similar time frame?
I think Elijah would be much closer to the time of Jesus.
Okay, so Elijah, I seem to think Elijah is like 500 B.C., is that right?
Moses is 1500 B.C.
Okay, so it is a lot closer to Christ, yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure Elijah was, I don't know if it was Elijah. It was the book of that Greg Braden did. He did a book on the prophecy of one of the great prophets that taught us how to pray. And that was 500 B.C.
Okay.
That might have been Elijah. I think it was.
500 B.C. is around the era of two sub-prophets, Confucius and Buddha. They have different names. Buddha would be called Sakya or Sakyamuni, and Confucius would be also known as Kayu. And that would be around their era.
Okay, so then that brings us up to the time of Christ, where that, I guess there was a shift in how things were done when Christ came on the picture, is that right?
Didn't
Christ bring in an energy that was a little bit different? Because didn't it take down the gods? I mean, it was almost like it reintroduced the Creator rather than to worship a god.
Yes, and I should hope so. I should hope that would be the understanding of what Christ was about.
Right. So, and you say now we have energy coming in that is shifting us all more toward Christ consciousness in our own individual consciousness.
Well, yes. It is our destiny. There are many corporeal worlds similar to our world, and each one arrives in the era. It's called Cosmon. There's a name for the maturity of the race, and that's what we have arrived at. I wouldn't phrase it as energy coming in, although that may be true, but simply that we have been on the planet for 75,000 years. We're going to be on the planet for another 75,000 years. So we've passed the midpoint already. In fact, Moses' time was the midpoint. And now we're entering the maturity of the race. And that involves spiritualization and putting our house in order.
So do you think that there is actually going to be another type of or subtype of species that emerges from this shift?
You know, I have a colleague who writes about that. He calls it Homo noeticus, which is like, you know, conscious man of consciousness, you know, the final evolvement of man. I don't talk in those terms. I think our physical setup is pretty permanent. Mm-hmm. That's what I brought out by showing that we're hybrids. We don't change and evolve. We just mix and turn into different kinds because of the mixing. So physically, I would say we are what we are and will remain that with minor modifications. But spiritually is where the big change is coming.
Yeah, I agree. I think that more and more people are connecting with an inner awareness of, I guess, their multidimensional nature would be the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And realize that they are but a projection into this time-space continuum from a much higher source, that we're much much more than what we appear to be at this level.
Right.
And that we have many
the
more
actually
abilities
says,
and gifts than what we, you know, what we thought we did.
Yeah.
Of course, the Aborigines knew that. So it's not like we're, I mean, it's not that it's new. It's that we're gaining what they had.
That's true.
Yeah. So there's really nothing new under the sun. But
except for the changes that are coming, and there are big changes coming.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there are. So what do you think the Earth is going to look like, say, in 100 years, 200 years? Do you think there'll be a significant change in religion, in spirituality?
Yes. Prophecy has the world coming under a single religion. And it's funny that you said 100 or 200 years because those are the figures I'm working with. The opening year of the Cosman era, which we're in now, was approximately 1848.
Okay.
And really, most of it manifested in America, because that was the year that the great age of spiritualism began with the Fox Sisters in Rochester, New York.
Mm-hmm.
1848. So we're more than 160 years into Cosman, and there are prophetic numbers that we work with to figure out what's happening. And the first significant figure is called a dawn. It's similar to the word dawn, the dawn of light. And the first dawn after the birth of Cosman in 1848 is 200 years. It's a 200-year cycle. So by the year 2048, which is not very far, there's going to be very major changes.
Yeah, what I see is that, you know, it's just natural when more people connect, you know, through meditation and other spiritual practices with their the wisdom of their higher self or their God connection, that there will not be so much need for the institutions as we have them, religious, even educational, and even, you know, medical and legal. You know, people
you know,
will naturally behave themselves. They will naturally know what to do for their health. They
That's
will naturally be able to learn, because everything we learn from books, we can learn from within. You know, I mean, if it was really, I guess, advanced, our ability to communicate with the inner dimensions, the multidimensional world, we wouldn't need external books. You know, we wouldn't
need that. That's exactly what prophecy says.
Yeah.
That there will be no books.
Right. You just go to the Akashic Records and start reading, you know, from multidimensional reality within. So it really would change everything. I mean, incredibly. So the institutions just wouldn't need to be so rigid, you know, for behavior
and
control.
That stubbornness is there, and I will add that prophecy says that the world is going to divide between believers and non-believers. there's going to be a strict division, one group going way and the other another way. But in the end, it will be the believers who are victorious.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if there's a separation dimensionally. You know, in other words, if there is a separation where there is a, you know, the people that are more in touch with multidimensional reality are basically in a lighter world, less dense world, they may separate completely from the others.
Oh, yes.
You know, they may not
it is a
be
separation.
In the same space.
I wrote about it and called it the dividing of the way in my book on the quickening.
Right. Well, Jesus said the wheat shall be separated from the chaff. That was the...
Yes, that's just what it means.
Right. And, you know, we don't really know what it's going to look like. I mean, it's hard for us to imagine it, you know, because...
The Armageddon and the war of the sons of light against the sons of dark, that's just a metaphor, because it's within each person that the light and the dark are fighting it out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. There's a lot of clearing, though, of negative spirits on the earth right now, though. There's a lot of clearing that's happening.
I wish a lot more. When I read the news about the Ukraine and the Congo and the Sudan and Syria, I wish there was a lot more clearing.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm talking about is more spiritual, the entities that are not in body. I think the entities that are in body are still fighting with each other and within themselves, like you said. I mean,
we're all in body.
We're
all embodied, and Syria is real, and the Sudan is real, and the Congo is real, and the Ukraine is real, and people want their freedom.
Right. And, you know, there are little pockets of, you know, where the negative power and control is loosening, you know, because of...
I hope, that's going to be happening, but the world is very stressed. I was talking on the phone last night with an African-American friend who has some relatives in Africa, in Burundi. In Burundi, he said to me, he said the president is an idiot, and what he's doing, they're killing a lot of people there. It's all politics.
Mm-hmm.
They're killing helpless people, and what they do, after they kill them, they cut off their head. And they throw the body down the toilet hole. They dig these 20-foot holes. And so I got some first-hand reports from my friend, because he's married to an African. And, there's a lot of darkness on the planet, and we need to know about it. We need to be aware of it and help extend the helping hand either to Africa for the pygmies to build bathrooms. You know, my understanding of the new spirituality is not a thing about self-meditation. It has to do with opening our eyes to the rest of humanity and uplifting and helping. And it's not about self, in other words. It's about others.
Mm-hmm. Well... I sort of think that sort of stuff is, the kind of thing you're describing with abuse of power with the government levels, and I think that that's just going to naturally resolve. And I think it's going to resolve because the people who are abusing power will either not be here or they're going to be incapacitated. I mean, I think that that will be, I mean, not that we shouldn't act, and we should, but I think just naturally with the energy coming in that's gonna take care of itself over time. And probably not a lot of time. Probably just a couple of years.
I see work as working on solutions and working together. I don't like the idea of just waiting for it to happen all by itself.
I'm not suggesting that. But what I'm saying is that we can be optimistic because
Oh, yes.
what the prophets have told us is that the energy coming in is going to disband and disintegrate the abusive power individuals and pockets, so that then all we really have to do is get the people that are now freed of that organized so that they can govern them themselves.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this is my theory. I mean, we'll see if it happens. But it's not like we have to go and, you know, topple regimes, okay? They're going to topple themselves, is what I'm saying. And it'll happen here, too. I mean, it's not just in Africa. It's the, you know, the Monsantos and the companies owned by the powers that be that are, you know, that are doing things that are not at all ethical. So, you know, it's also in the West. I mean, it's wherever there's abuse of power.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't think we have to, you know, become revolutionaries like they had to, you know, with the British, you know, and when the country was born. I think things will sort themselves out. And then what we'll need to do, and I think this is where everybody needs to get organized, is help the people who need to, you know, reorganize the government and reorganize all the institutions that have been kind of fallen apart, you know, because of the abuse of power people, and get health care and get government and get education back up. You know, it's more like a building back up what we need to have.
Okay.
So anyway, we're coming up to the end of the hour. Would you like to give some contact information?
I don't think so.
You just want to mention the name of your book again?
Yes, The Mysterious Origins of Hybrid Man and the Prequel, The Lost History of the Little People.
Okay. And you wrote also The Psychic Life of Abraham Lincoln. That sounds like an interesting book.
Yeah, that was a fun book to write.
I'll bet. Well, he was an amazing person. I didn't realize how amazing until I actually saw the movie Lincoln. I didn't know all of the things he went through.
Oh.
So is that a book that they can get as well if they want to read that one?
Sure. All of my books are available at Amazon or at the bookstore or from my publisher, Inner Traditions.
Uh-huh. And you've also written for Forbidden Science and Atlantis Rising and New Dawn Magazine. Is that right?
Yeah, I've got a cover story on the current issue of Atlantis Rising called Global Drought. I mean, Global Drying.
Okay.
So I've been writing for years about global cooling and drying. I'm very much opposed to the global warming trend because I think it's false science. And the drought is part of that story. Anyway, it's on the cover of Atlantis Rising, the current issue, number 104.
Great. Well, that sounds interesting. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been an interesting discussion.
And I thank you for having me.
Well, thanks a lot. We have been interviewing Dr. Susan Martinez. Her book is The Mysterious Origins of Hybrid Man, Crossbreeding and the Unexpected Family Tree of Humanity. A very fascinating book, and one that I think the theory fits the evidence, and in her book you can see the lack of evidence that exists within the fossil record for other theories that are alternatives to this one.
Thanks a lot.
Yes. Well, thanks so much, Susan. I appreciate meeting you. And if you ever want to come down and present Noetic Science, just let me know. We can get you We do Noetic Science the third Thursday of every month. Tricia McKinnon is giving Noetic Science this month. You might know Tricia. She's got a lot of information about the mystery school. And we'd love to have you come down if you'd like.
Oh, thank you.
All righty. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay,
this is Dr.
Susan.
Care. Take care. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.